You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com. And joining me on the other line, as usual, is Tony East, West Indiana Community Newspapers, and 8.9 seconds. Tony, how you doing?
I appreciate you doing my titles for once.
Yeah, usually I just do. Usually I don't give you anything because you have like 9 titles. But I was like, okay. I don't know. I just remembered. I figured you got to promote 8.9 second stuff because you've been doing a lot of good work there.
We're balling this month.
Please
read our stuff.
Your past like 3 months, you've been doing a ton of stuff.
We have been. I mean, we're covering summer league like a lot.
Well, I mean, anytime I pull up a post on the Pacers, it's either you or Caitlin. It's usually the two people I see name on all the posts almost. Ben a little bit, I guess. Like Caitlin, any corner is you. You and Ben at 8.9.
Ben posts a lot. He's good. If you don't follow Ben, follow Ben.
Yeah, so I pulled up an Al Jefferson article today, and it was by you. So that's why all you're doing. So you want to start there? Let's start with Al Jefferson because that relates to the other move.
He's in China.
He is. So
yeah, he's in China. We talked about the waiver last week. I think the only thing now is that he's in China, I guess.
Yeah. So
what do we need to add to that?
It sounds like he went to China to play because he could basically probably be on the 12th man of any NBA team he wants. I mean, he's that kind of veteran leadership. He's going to make, $4 million no matter what happens because of his non-guarantee. So it was really, did he want to be a 12th man on an NBA team or do he want to play minutes and maybe – build some international brand in China? Because I mean, I'm sure he probably over there they don't play as fast and as, you know, spread out. He probably should play big minutes and dominate.
Yeah, he's been to China before for the NBA Global Games in 2015. There's some cute pictures of him with some Chinese kids holding the ball. So I think he liked it there. Maybe it left a good impression on him, and now he can be, you know, a legend there, and he can play a ton of minutes. And his old school style will literally dominate these Chinese dudes. So that'll be fun for him, I think.
Yeah, and I think he also is in better shape. Where, like, the problem was, even if how good a shape he got in right now, the only way he could play in the NBA big minutes now is by developing a three-point shot, which is hard to do at his age. He's 33, he's 15 years in the league. Whereas you can go to China, if he's in good enough shape, he's still relatively young, where he can probably have 2 or 3 solid years in China, build his brand up, maybe build some, help promote the NBA internationally and kind of set up his post-career kind of plans.
And yeah, so exactly.
Basketball. And a guy who's played basketball probably all his life, right? Didn't he skip college? So he came right out of high school. He doesn't know anything else but to play basketball and probably wants to keep playing. So it's a good way to kind of just extend his career, kind of like Marbury did in some sense.
Yeah, and they'll get a ton of marketing out there. Ron Artest, former Pacer, another guy did this. You know, get a ton of marketing out there. He's going to be one of the best, if not the best player in the entire league. You know, that's going to be really cool for him. And he's an ambassador for NBA basketball at that point, which what a good guy to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if he can make Joel Embiid look foolish at just small moments, he can make literally any player outside the NBA look foolish anytime.
Yeah, that'll be fun for him. I'm excited. That's cool. I don't know. I want to see a picture of him holding his Flying Tigers jersey.
Well, it's a little bit disappointing because I wanted him to come back as being kind of the 12th man. Because he's had a lot of influence, it seemed like, on Sabonis and Turner in like a positive way. He's been kind of their rock. I don't know. Like, he seems like he's been mentoring those guys, which maybe they're ready. Maybe Turner's ready to sort of find development of the player without him. But I would have liked to see him on the bench. I think he will probably be a coach someday, it seems like, too, or if he wants to be a coach.
Yeah, I think he wants to be a coach, too. And I think he will at some point. I just don't know when. I think he could be good for that, though. I mean, he talked a lot about, you know, being a mentor for the younger centers last year, and you could tell they learned from him. But I don't think, you know, he's almost too young to be a coach. He's only 34, so I think maybe in a few years he can give it time. He will be.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. I think he wants to keep playing as much as he can, but eventually he probably – maybe even coaches internationally. I mean, that's a big thing. A lot of players go and coach in Europe or China. Maybe that's what he does. I'm sure his whole move is just to keep playing for a little while, set up his post-career, because I'm sure he'll have a good post-career. He's made plenty of money, so I'm not sure it's always about the money at this point.
I mean, it's definitely not about the money.
Yeah, he's made over $100 million in his career. I mean,
yes,
he's set up for life, let's put it that way. Another move the Pacers made was they waived Alex Poitras – today, recording this on the 8th, they waived him Friday. He's still on their summer league roster, which we'll talk about later. But they waived Poitras to basically open up a roster spot so they could have an empty roster spot and they could get Kyle Quinn, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, they didn't have to waive Poitras yet, so the timing was somewhat interesting.
They did it because Quinn makes it the 12th guy on the team. They wanted an empty roster spot.
No, they only have 13 now.
They have 13. Wait, how many do they have? They have, if you add, they have 12 with O'Quinn without Poitras. They have
13 with O'Quinn and without Poitras.
Okay, so then they don't have an open roster spot.
They have two open roster spots.
No, I'm talking about on an active. Well, on the 13 active, I thought they would. They had 13 roster spots and two.
You have 13 active spots every game, but the roster is still 15 deep. I mean, they have more.
Yeah, but I thought they were going to keep. Usually, you keep one like playing roster spot. But it seems like though 13 and 14 is going to be Elise probably.
Yeah, he's been looking good summer league. We'll talk about that in a minute.
So, I mean, my guess is part of Poitras is just so they could bring in O'Quinn and have an empty roster spot going into spring, going into training camp.
Yes, I figured they would just keep him until July 25th because why not? I mean, they're not paying him yet. But, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, he wasn't going to be here, so I knew I thought they were going to waive him. It's just when. So he's gone now.
Well, because I think you assume most teams will bring in 14 active guys, and I think this is kind of a signal just to some of the guys that we have an extra spot you're competing for.
Well, really, it's a courtesy to Poitras to waive him before summer league. So if he plays well, he could make another land on another team and not be under contract because they have no plan for him.
It's kind of two of that. I mean, it's also since that the summer league guys that are playing for the team, hey, we have an extra spot. If you really look awesome, we have a spot for you, assuming all our picks come back. And this obviously helps Poitras out.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a kind of a win-win, which makes sense. But O'Quinn, let's talk about Kyle O'Quinn.
Yeah, so they signed him to the which is $4.49 million, not 4.5 technically.
$4.449 million.
$4.49 million. Whatever. It's $51,000 off of 4.5. Somebody on Twitter was complaining about that. And I was like, it's $51,000 to these NBA players, which means nothing.
I just hate that it gets rounded up when it's below. You know, it's not actually rounding up. It should be four. Whatever. It's closer to 4.4 than 4.5.
By $1,000. But hey. Essentially, Kyle O'Quinn is going to fill into the Trevor Booker spot. Is what I kind of view it as.
Yes. I also agree with that.
Similar player, younger, which is what they sort of, the point was to go to skew younger. I think that's why, I think that's why they were at Jefferson too. They want to have a younger bench in some sense. So it's younger guy, but puts up similar style, doesn't shoot threes. You know, big rebounder. Well, it's a big body out there. I mean, that's, you know, there's some positive. I'm not sure how much impact he'll have on the roster actually this season, but he'll probably play 10, 15 minutes and be kind of the emergency center at times.
Yeah, he's 28, which is nice. Booker and Jefferson both pushing 30. And I think he can fill both of their roles to an extent, which is really good. Booker might be a little better of a shooter than him, but that's really the only thing O'Quinn is not good at. He's a good screener. There's a really good post on the Knicks wall about how good he is at passing to Doug McDermott specifically, but in general, he's an outstanding passer for a big man. His assist percentage last year was 6% higher than Sabonis's was this year, which is insane because Sabonis is an excellent passer for a big man. So he can really whip it around. He's really good at working out of the high post and deep in the post. He's really good at that whole passing at, you know, creating pressing, and I think that will be welcome on the second unit. The only thing is I don't like his fit next to Sabonis in particular. But I think next to Turner, he could be really good. And as the only center, he could be really good. So really, it's a good depth piece and a good fit piece.
Yeah, you hit it. He's sort of the perfect insurance policy when inevitably Turner response gets hurt for a little while. It happened last year. It happened. One guy will miss some 3 or 4 games. Something happens. Like it just happens to NBA players. They miss a little. So he's a good kind of insurance policy for that. So they don't have to worry about playing a guy who just, like Jefferson, was out of shape and couldn't really do it. And like you said, he sort of adds another versatility where you can go a different way, where you can go really kind of pounded in kind of center. You know, instead of playing completely spread, you can do what they did where they put Sabonis and Booker together, which is sort of a more rebound heavy, tougher to, I guess, to sort of like to.
I'm really out on the idea of Sabonis O'Quinn together.
So I am too, just because the idea they both can't shoot threes, but if Sabonis can shoot, I mean, he showed flashes. Sabonis 3-point percentage could get up to like the mid 30s, then they can probably play together. So,
yeah.
Well, I just think it gives you another dimension of just a more plotting lineup is kind of what I'm thinking of.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. And McMillan talked about as much in that summer league game when he said they wanted to try, you know, maybe doing some more too big stuff because with LeBron gone, you know, maybe the spacing isn't as important in the Eastern Conference anymore. But it's just that, you know, Sabonis's skills, his really good skills are the pick and roll and passing out of the post. And I think having Kyle O'Quinn out there would make him have less space to do all of that. And I think that they kind of overlap too much in specific skills to be great together. And they can't defend the perimeter at all together. So I don't think it would work very well with with them on the court at the same time. Although I think O'Quinn would work with Turner a lot better.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure O'Quinn really plays in the rotation that much. I don't see. I think we'll see.
10 minutes the game is perfect.
I think we'll see some coaching decision DMPs just more often. Like we see with Jefferson a little bit. I doubt he'll dress all the time. I think he'll dress more than Jefferson just because he's younger and he's not as like you're not as worried about playing him. I think you're worried more about fit than actually like can he even be on the court. Like I think he can be on the court. It's just it's what he fits better with. But like you said, I mean, if they can, I mean, I think there's lineups where they could just play him by himself if somebody's hurt or if whatever they figure something out, they can play him with Turner. I mean, you really, because they made their bench better at shooting, you don't have the issue of you can't, like the problem last year was you couldn't play Booker, Sabonis, and Season together because none of them could shoot threes.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Now you've got enough shooting elsewhere that if Sabonis is like not the worst 3-point shooter next year where he's up to in the 30s somewhere, you can probably steal a few minutes like that just because they're such good offensive rebounders. They're just so big and so hard, kind of a mismatch on that end of the floor in some sense. And then you can also figure out, can he play, you know, next to Thad Young a little bit too? And Thad Young's also kind of the same idea, not a great 3-point shooter, but can he sub in for Thad? And maybe O'Quinn kind of shoots more from three this year just because that's the way the NBA is going. Everybody's working on the 3-point shot. You don't know.
Well, when centers get hurt and need rest too, I think, you touched on that. He can fill in way better than Jefferson in those scenarios. When he has to play bigger minutes, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, and I think the whole point of this offseason was to make the Pacers deeper. It's what it seemed like. Like they know their top seven. They know they're really their rock solid playoff rotation. It's like in the regular season when somebody gets hurt, like Oladipo misses 3 or 4 games, or Turner misses 3 or 4 games, or Thad Young, whatever it is, we need to have like insurance policies. Like they didn't have last year. Last year, Oladipo hurt, and they went 0-7. I mean, Turner was hurt. Sabonis was hurt probably for a combined 20 games, give or take both. And they it was hard in those games. I mean, they struggled. They were fortunate that really Sabonis stepped up when Turner got hurt a lot and was able to play really well. But their benchings were really bad with Jefferson. I mean, they were awful. Yep. So Jefferson scored like 12 points a couple of times. That was basically how they survived it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And O'Quinn will mitigate some of that risk. And again, I think too, if he is looking to do these two big groups, having O'Quinn adds depth when/if they try Leaf and he doesn't work this year, then they could just go switch to O'Quinn, which could work fine.
Yeah, and if Leaf really does step up, it makes you 11 deep. So it's kind of cool.
That would be huge.
So let's move on then to TJ Leaf, who had a up and down, say the least, Summer League weekend.
You're going to listen to this hopefully before their third Summer League game Monday, but him and Aaron Holiday flipped because in the first game.
Hold on. Let's take a pause and then we'll talk about Summer League after this. All right. So we were talking about Summer League. They flipped on, you said Holiday and Leaf flipped on Friday and Saturday. Go with your point.
Yes. So game one, Leaf was terrible. I mean, abysmal. He was trying to create almost too much. It felt like almost an isolation situation. The shot was not falling for him. He had a 3-pointer that hit like the underside of the front of the rim. He really looked awful. And Holiday looked amazing. 23 points, 8 of the first 10. Passing was good. And then in the second game, they had Leaf be a little bit more of a finisher role than a creator role. And he was doing a good job of shot faking, putting the ball on the floor, getting to the rim. And he looked a lot better. He shot, I think, 7 of 13. Meanwhile, Holiday went 3 of 15, but he showed some good passing out of the pick and roll. But he could not finish at the rim at all, going 3 of 15. I felt like for him, the issue in the second game was just that he felt like he was 6 feet tall. He was struggling to get the ball over taller dudes. And on D, he kept getting bullied by Lonnie Walker or Derek White, who's taller than him. But he didn't, he looked pretty good in both games overall. And Leaf switched from bad to good from game one to game two. That's a lot of thoughts. Your turn.
Yeah. So I'm going to do Leaf first. We have a Leaf and then we'll move to Holiday. You kind of hit the main point. I think he stunk on Friday night. I mean, he just couldn't hit anything.
Terrible.
He just couldn't hit anything. I don't know whether it was just because he was cold, not ready. Whatever it was, he couldn't hit anything. Then he finally got it going on Saturday, where at least he looked like, okay, this guy has something going for him. The poor member again in Summer League, nobody plays defense. Nobody. I mean, like, so if you're not hitting your, I mean, you're going to get shots. If you can't hit your shots, it's more on you than on anybody else. It just means you're cold. I did though think,
His his role changed a little because in the first game they would throw it to him in the high post and have him kind of turn and face or, run a play of some sort where he had the ball in his hands at the start. But I feel like in the second game they had him more operating pick and pop or, things like that where he was finishing plays more than creating any scenario.
Okay, so that was going to be my next point, but cool.
Dang it.
Well, I was getting there like that. But yes, like you said, he what Leaf does a better job of is that he's better when he's going towards the rim or kind of coming off, I want to say like offset. So he's coming around the corner, kind of getting the getting a three-point shot and pulling up right away than just having the ball in his hands all the time. Because he's not, he's like a power forward that's not good with the ball in his hands all the time. He kind of needs to be directed to where it needs to go in some sense. And that's what they did more Saturday, which is why he looked better. You know, you saw flashes of that kind of touch on Saturday that I was kind of praising when he got drafted, that this guy's got real touch inside 5 feet and all kind of stuff around the rim, can just really put up shots like that. So you saw some of that on Saturday, which you didn't really see Friday, which is sort of the big difference.
Yes, exactly. And I think he'll be better in the next game too, that they know his role is a little more established. And, you know, I thought he'd do better than he has been. So that it is something to look out for, but I think that they know what he's good at versus these guys now and how he fits in. I think he'll do better in the Monday game.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, I want to move on to Holiday because I think Holiday was the one who sort of surprised you, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, I thought he'd be good.
No, I thought you said on our last podcast, I think Holiday might stink just because he's a rookie. They don't usually do well. Like
rookie point guards stink in the NBA. In summer league, everybody does fine since it's like even competition.
I'm pretty sure you were down on Holiday. I said he was going to have a good run because he's a little older than all the other guys. And you're like, I don't know if that matters kind of thing. I think he might still stink because he's small.
I don't think the age thing matters a ton. I think it's just that the talent level is equal. But anyway, he did do well. He did really well in the first game.
Yeah, I think from Holiday, the one thing you really saw is he's got a really good-looking jump shot. I mean, three-point shot. I mean, yeah. It comes out of fast. It's quick. It's smooth. You know, I think part of his problem is, again, he's just 6 feet tall, so it's like he has to shoot so much farther away, it feels like at times. You know, I feel like a couple of times he just pulled up and just was just short, but it looks good coming out of his hand every single time, and it seemed like there's a spot from the league. The problem is that he is, like you said, so short, and he was kind of taking advantage of the defenders giving a lot of space, which he might not get in the NBA.
Oh, absolutely, and you know, it gets up quick, and his 6'7 wingspan is a high release for his height, so he can get up quick. And being catch and shoot is actually going to be huge for him because if none of his other skills ever develop, he can still play if he's got that skill.
Yeah, and, you know, he made I forget if it was in Houston game. I think it was Houston game probably. It's the only time he made a good three. There was one of the early threes where he came out of like a – came looped around basically and got the corner three, kind of like Oladipo would get sometimes. And he kind of looked like that almost, where he just got the ball at a good spot and pulled up and drained it. And it kind of reminded me of the plays they run for Oladipo, which – I was kind of saying they should do more of it, just trying to set Oladipo up towards more of the corner, because that spot of the court where Oladipo just would hit threes, like make every three, it felt like at times they were making him shoot bad threes. But it seems like for Holiday, if he's kind of playing off the ball and roaming around, he might get some of those kind of sub corner threes where they're not quite in the corner, but on that edge right there, which are good shots if you're a solid 3-point shooter, because they're closer than the normal three and they're really sort of in rhythm shots at times.
I think a lot of guys have been good shooting the corner three for the Pacers too. CJ Wilcox knocked down a couple of those, but I agree with you, and I like that about Holiday because his rim finishing was where he struggled the most probably.
Yeah, I thought he was okay against Houston in the rim. He had a couple of nice ones. I think it was really he struggled against San Antonio. I mean, it was bad.
Well, and going against Trey Duvall is different than going against Derek White, who's already played in the NBA. His defense was not good. Trey Duvall gassed him quite a bit in the first game. It was fine, I guess. But it wasn't encouraging. But yeah, his rim finishing in the first game was a lot better. You're right. The second game, it was a little bit of a struggle around the basket for him. So that's something to look out for in the third game.
Yeah. So then is there anybody else in summer league you want to talk about? I know you probably, I was kind of just watching Leaf and Holiday, to be honest. I wasn't really going in depth. Anybody else?
Yeah. Elise, I think we should talk about, Alizé. I think we should
talk about. Okay. Yeah. That's a good one.
He is a rebounding machine. I feel like he's out of position on like every shot attempt that goes up, and then somehow he gets the rebound. And he gets like two rebounds on the same possession a lot, and he's a pretty good finisher around the basket, and he runs in transition, he can dribble. I like him.
Do you think just his effort wise on the San Antonio game probably bottom roster spot? Just the fact that he was
maybe. I think waving Poitras gives him a huge chance.
I mean, I think he's still probably the lock for the two way contract, but maybe not. Maybe they bring him in like the EK deal, you know, 1 year half, second year half guarantee kind of thing.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea.
But I thought, really, right? I mean, the big thing about him was just his motor, especially in the San Antonio game. I mean, we've
right, and that's all over. He needs to show that, given that he's so unproven and grew so much and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't watch in the games, I'm sure, I guess the 8.9 seconds, dude. There were a couple of just times of his high motor you could see off replays, just him just fighting for rebounds, offensive end, knocking ball. I mean, he just has sort of like an energy about him for a summer league game that's kind of like surprising almost.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that'll project going forward, and I think that gives him a chance in the NBA just because he has those skills that no one else wants to have.
Yeah, I think, again, the problem is he's still undersized. His best chance in the NBA is to alert off Thad Young. I mean, they're going to be similar players, that kind of similar small forward, power forward, hybrid kind of player.
He has center skills, so being 6'8 does suck for him. You're right.
Is he 6'8 or 6'9? I thought he was 6'9. I don't know.
You gotta be right. Well, the hair makes it impossible to say.
Yeah, you're right. I just remember when the Pacers drafted him that I was thinking that he's kind of like, if he could learn from Thad, to be the player he'd become, because he was the one who was shorter coming out of kind of, right, going into college. He was like 6'3 or 6'1 and then kind of sprouted, right?
Yeah. No, he's 5'9 his freshman year of high school and had like guard skills, and then he graduated at like 6'6.
Which sort of reminds me of the way Thad plays, where Thad has a little bit of guard skills in him sometimes. I know it's not great, but has the ability to put the ball on the floor. And so that can be kind of Elise's role, is that he can sort of be a guy who can put the ball on the floor, but be kind of a decent rebounder, decent finisher, I guess is the right way to put it.
Yeah, for sure.
But again, I want to press that we probably shouldn't read too much into these two summer league games.
No, that is Twitter has been a disaster these couple of days with people saying X will be great, I can tell from this, or X will be bad. It's like summer league has so little meaning on what guys become. It's insane.
So is there anybody non-Pacer wise that you liked summer league? Just wondering.
Ooh.
Notice anybody caught your eye? I have one, but it's not this one.
A few guys. Derek White on the Spurs really has, but I thought he would be good before this, so it doesn't matter. Bagley has looked good.
Okay. So big name. I'm looking for big names. So Bagley's a big name. Okay.
Oh, not big names or big
no,
names?
No, I am looking for big names. I mean, nobody knows who Derek White is. Nobody's going to know Derek White is for two more years if he's anywhere. Good.
Oh, he's going to be in the Spurs rotation next year, I bet.
Okay. But, I mean, they're going to know, but like people know
who Bagley is. Not really, honestly. Maybe Jair Smith.
I thought Trae Young showed a little flashes at times. That's kind of nice.
He was really – well, he was bad in Sacramento Summer League, but he was good in their first game last night.
Yeah, I'm thinking of last night's game. I mainly just watched last night.
Give that dude time, because if he can get that 30-footer that he loves to pull up to fall, he's going to be good.
That's what I kind of was thinking. And I was watching him, I was just like, you know, he maybe doesn't have it all together now, but he's 19 years old.
Yeah.
And he's going to a team that doesn't need a win anytime in the next 2 or 3 years. Let him develop and he could become something. Like the thing about Curry too is that Curry came out also when he was about a junior, so he had 2 extra years of college to sort of like hone his skills. And so I mean, there is some value to coming out and coming out as a freshman from all these guys out there. I mean, is you get the time to really like not have to go to class. You can just work on your game, those 19 to 21 years have to go to class and all the other stuff that goes with being a college student.
Yep, I agree. I'm excited for him. I get why he could be a bust, but I'm really excited for him.
Yeah. But for the Pacers-wise, I think Holiday, like I said, Holiday showed flash and so did Leaf. So Leaf's kind of the one who's to be good this year. Holiday can sort of – has got a redshirt year under him.
Well, and again, God, we need to say this every episode even if we don't talk about this. Rookie point guards always suck. Always. Like, always. It's not because he sucks. It's because he's a rookie.
Yeah, and he has a redshirt year. They have 5 or 6 guards in this team now. I mean, they don't need him. I mean, if you count Tyree Evans as a guard, they've got 4 guards plus – they've got Sumners plus – I mean, I guess they don't necessarily play guard, right? Those are the 5 guys. So they're 5 kind of guards. So they don't – and they've got 3 point guards if you add Tyreek as a point guard.
Yeah, it's going to be Tyreek, I think, might get some point guard minutes, which will be interesting if they don't like what Kojo can supply for the second unit.
Yeah, so – to finish off the show, I wanted to talk about actually the Tony Parker signing real fast, just as a bad tradition, but, so I know at one point in the season, we had talked about how for playoff teams to kind of take the next step, sometimes you need, or you want to find that like veteran guy who has a ton of playoff experience, who can sort of come in the last like 3 to 5 minutes and carry you or help you out. So like, kind of like the manager Ginobili role. And so I was really high on the Tony Parker signing for the Hornets, and I was really kind of disappointed that Pacers didn't go after and get him, to be honest. So similar players with a similar role are like Paul Pierce, a couple years ago for the Wizards, Derek Fisher with Oklahoma City, and then you told me before the show, Karl Malone, the Lakers, no forward. Guys who are sort of these veteran players who can just come in and, you know, in the last minutes of game, get up shots, not screw up on defense, you know, be positive in the court all the time. And so – I was kind of going to pose the question to you. So Tony Parker was signed to the Hornets. I like that. Is there anybody out there right now the Pacers could go after and get to help them take that next step? Because I think that's part of winning the playoffs is having experience and having a veteran guy who can do that.
Tony Allen comes to mind for me.
Okay.
Is that a good one? Or is that, I mean, he's not like the veteran champion pedigree that Tony Parker has. You know, Tony Parker's a finals MVP. Those don't grow on trees. But, you know, Tony Allen comes to mind as a guy who could rub off some defensive know-how on some of the younger guards. And, you know, like you said, not sucking on D is huge for a guy you're going to get in that role. And I think Tony Allen could be perfect for that. But he didn't even play on a team at the end of last year. He might be too old to even get on the court anymore. I'm trying to think of other guys. Do you have any yourself?
Well, one I was wondering, is Parker also tradable? Like, couldn't they trade for him at the trade? I mean, that's something, right? I mean, like,
Tony Parker, no. Tony Parker stinks.
No, but are you sure he's not, he can't play, if he plays 20 games this year and can't play 2 minutes in the end of a fourth quarter game?
Tony Parker is bad at basketball right now.
You might have said something about Derek Fisher, though, like 5 years ago, same concept. And there were some playoff games for Oklahoma State. Derek Fisher was like second best player by Durant.
We'll not go that far.
He was playing better than Westbrook in a bunch of games, I thought.
Yeah, Tony Parker just posted far and away his lowest impact stats last year.
I know, but you're not asking him to play in the regular season. You're asking for a guy just to play in the postseason. Just that.
Oh, I guess.
You're not asking for a guy to impact. I mean, Parker, you just sit him on the bench, let him like sit all season long, and then you bring him in when you need him at the last minute of a playoff game, basically.
Yeah, I guess. I don't want Tony Parker on the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't really have a ton on top of my head. I thought the Rondo was kind of a guy I would have liked to maybe kind of do that. He has playoff experience. That's the only thing that really came to mind. I mean, there just aren't a ton of veteran guys left. I just thought that signing was worth noting because it just is such a – you look at it and you're like, why are they paying him $5 million? It's kind of a waste of money. But if he's just going to sit on the bench, he's kind of the guy you want when you're sort of where the Pacers are, in the where they're like borderline contenders, where they could – that little margin player could take you over the top. And so I just think that's something to look for. You know, they can make a trade for the guy. I mean, they got the assets to maybe they could, you know, flip for a rim reception player. That's basically what Parker got. Just something to look at. Come trade deadline, is there kind of a guy out there or in the buyout market, a guy who had a lot of a playoff experience they could sort of go after?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think they will. They did it with Booker last year. I think they will again this year. Honestly, they're probably going to make one of the two guys they signed to the last roster spots non-guaranteed, so they have that kind of option.
Yeah, they'll probably do the thing too. Like I said, they'll probably make at least, I think, a two-way, honestly. And then they'll probably do what they did with Wilkins, right? Make it non-guaranteed until like February, January range.
That is my guess as well.
All right. You got anything else for this podcast?
Just keep watching Summer League. They might only have two more games. I know they seem boring now, but when you're bored of basketball in August, you'll be happy you watch these.
Are we going to do a mailbag next week? Should we do one like Wednesday or Friday?
Well, you know what, Adam? It might depend on how far they get in the playoffs.
All right, so let's say we're shoot for a mailbag Wednesday or Friday. Send us some questions.
For a Friday mailbag. Right?
Questions at Freedom95, at Locked On Pacers, or at TSNBA.
Excuse me. Yeah, yes, we will.
Send your questions to those three handles. We'll compile them. We'll try to answer them. We'll do a Summer League podcast, and then we'll see where we're at come second, third week of July, because we are starting to hit the dog days of no basketball summer.
Yes, we are, sadly.
Really sad. Hope you guys have your baseball teams picked out for August. And yeah, no, I'm a Reds fan. This is going to be a long summer. That's all we got for this Locked On Pacers podcast. Like I said, you can follow us on Twitter, Locked On Pacers. Leave us 5-star reviews on Stitcher, Spotify. Go ahead and do that. That helps boost our profile and just helps us know about our fan base out there. As always, have a great rest of your day.